Welcome to Global E-Commerce Tech Talks. I'm your host, Michael LeBlanc. This podcast is brought to you in conjunction with the Global E-Commerce Leaders Forum. In this episode, part two of my interview with the Global E-Commerce Leaders Forum founders Kent Allen and Jim Okamura, we talk about the brand-building challenges and opportunities going into China, the reality of the multi-platform future that it can accelerate brand awareness and adoption, and a broadening of taste that is framing new purchase decisions for new brands. Next, Jim and Kent look at the trends that existed prior to the COVID-19 crisis and that have accelerated with recent events, confirm that the art of brand building is as important as the science of digital commerce, and lastly, we talk about the truism that the smart money follows the consumer and that China consumers like to shop cross-border. So let's jump right in now to my conversation with Kent and Jim. Jim and Ken, let's pick it up right where we left off talking about brand building in China. We've talked before, each of us, about the challenges of the pure play killing zone in North American retail, how hard it is to build brands purely online. And that's one of the reasons many turn to opening up physical stores. But it feels like the North American situation is not exactly analogous to the situation in China, with so many shoppers online and such predominance of online apps for consumers. What did the research tell us about consumer behavior and brand building?
Yeah, certainly brand building remains one of the top challenges for any company going into China. We've always taken a position that the brand equity is a key starting foundational piece for any company entering into an international marketplace. But in China, as you point out, it is very different. And I think that's really why, you know, we have focused so much on the multiple platform future that we believe a lot of brands are going to be, you know, working within. And China is perhaps, you know, the best example of that. So we're seeing that, you know, leaders are blending digital and store-based, you know, touch points and using omni-channel best practices to increase, you know, not only brand awareness, but understanding and acceptance, you know, of that company's brand. The digital teams are going multi-platform, you know, by including more commerce, you know, capabilities in the social and messaging, you know, platforms as well, and spreading that to their influencers to use to reach to the shoppers and consumers, and really tap into evolving consumer tastes and preferences.
Ken, what did you observe from the research?
So as far as the consumers, you know, one particular trend of note that surfaced during the research was that more and more consumers in China want to differentiate themselves from other consumers in China. We discussed this move beyond the mass luxury that people have really associated with the Chinese consumer, especially the higher net worth consumer in recent years. We looked at that during our China e-commerce workshop back in September. We had about 40 e-commerce leaders who spent a half day or so discussing our initial findings. We think that the global e-commerce leaders, you know, should watch this broadening of taste beyond mass luxury. Luxury for the masses, or, you know, again, at least the wealthier consumer classes in China, has really framed the purchasing perceptions of Chinese consumers for decades. So we think the rise of individuality, if you want to call it that, in China does offer growing, especially the less well-known brands, opportunities to connect with shoppers in China. Again, as we mentioned in the first interview, this idea of different brands, smaller brands, digital native brands, quote unquote, finding their platform meshes quite well with this idea that there are more distinct segments within the Chinese consumer population emerging. The leaders that we interviewed also stressed to us that the art of brand building is as important as the science of digital commerce and the supporting technologies. And part of the brand building is really understanding how the preferences of the shoppers in China are changing, Michael.
It's so fascinating. I have to think, given the time with the COVID-19 crisis, the trends that were evident before that we've spoken of just now and that in the first episode are just going to be amplified and perhaps even advanced years, if not months, kind of like a wormhole effect. We've talked about the retail brands selling with their marketplace partners like Alibaba and messaging platforms like WeChat. What about DTC consumers? DTC to consumers directly into China?
Yeah, this has been a topic of conversation with a lot of companies within the Gulf community for quite a while now. Obviously, you know, many of us have grown up with DTC e-commerce, you know, dominating our business plans and so on. But in China, depending upon the data that you're looking at, generally you're going to see 90% plus of the e-commerce, you know, volume really going through the dominant, you know, online marketplaces. So DTC or direct e-commerce, you know, has always played kind of a much smaller role. Mm-hmm. But, you know, by and large, you know, what we've been hearing from, you know, a lot of the retail executives is that China's marketplaces will continue to dominate. There's no doubt about that. But DTC e-commerce within China, you know, it's going to remain, you know, nascent. And there's a few opinions in terms of where and when we need to invest in, you know, direct e-commerce. So investing in direct e-commerce, cross-border, you know, DTC e-commerce is viewed by some brands as a hedge against, you know, the dominant marketplaces like Tmall and JD.com. Some experienced sellers, you know, are telling us that they're hedging their bets on China e-commerce growth by keeping the DTC lights on and making sure they're still operational there. So it's a bit of a mixed bag right now. Some executives just don't see the need for both a marketplace presence as well as investing in a separate DTC e-commerce site and all the supporting operations. You know, these leaders are kind of seeing the richer DTC, you know, site shopping experience, you know, really starting to more collapse, you know, within the online marketplace platforms instead. So interesting to see just different opinions there.
Yeah, it's so interesting. And again, back to our earlier days thinking about, you know, remember how powerful AOL shopping was, right? Which kind of that portal of shopping dominated so much. And then it evolved really quickly out of that into a direct relationship. Of course, we could call Amazon the new AOL portal in some way, shape, or form, but not quite. Would it be correct to say that more bets are being placed on cross-border DTC e-commerce operations that fulfill orders for shoppers in China from the U.S. and other countries?
Generally speaking, yes is the answer. The smart money follows the shopper in China. And, you know, that saying has been as true today as when we started Gelf back in 2014. The bottom line is that consumers in China, they just really like to purchase cross-border. Cross-border e-commerce, going online, going to a U.S.-based website, e-commerce operations, getting a product, having it delivered, white glove delivery. You know, it's like this seal of authenticity. So buying a product from an e-commerce operation that's situated in the U.S. means the Chinese consumer is kind of guaranteeing themselves that they're not buying a knockoff or a counterfeit product. It's the real deal. It's almost like an insurance policy, if you will. And as we mentioned earlier, we're seeing more shoppers also seeking unique merchandise and distinct products that let them stand out from the crowd. In many ways, Tmall is a great destination for the well-known global brands and tried and true products, both from a luxury and an aspirational perspective. But, you know, Tmall is not always the place to find the long tail products, especially those from, you know, some of the new digital native brands, maybe the smaller fashion brands that are offering the latest cutting edge designs or retro fashions or whatever's hot. So a lot of times those companies don't, you know, haven't really built the brand to necessarily get on Tmall's radar, if you will. So the idea of being able to kind of blend Tmall-based purchasing opportunities with cross-border e-commerce offerings is very compelling.
Let's talk about the supply chain component of that. Are the products purchased via cross-border DTC shipped from the U.S. and or Canada or wherever? Are the executives in the Gulf community seeing more retail brands drop ship orders direct from factories in China and Southeast Asia or elsewhere around the world? What's the lay of the land in terms of the product fulfillment and supply chain?
Yes, we definitely see a growth in drop shipping, but you still see many products that are shipped directly to China from U.S.-based distribution centers and fulfillment operations. During the interviews, we heard several stories about products being shipped from Asia to the U.S., stored in these facilities, and then shipped right back to consumers in greater China, you know, elsewhere in Asia. We also started to hear, really, I think for the first time, certainly we didn't hear this in 2017, a growing frustration about all these, you know, shipping practices not necessarily being sustainable and aligned with more of the sustainability practices that we're seeing. So it's probably no surprise that we're seeing more investment in regional distribution and hybrid fulfillment strategies that are targeting the orders from consumers in China. Drop shipping solutions from China are popular quite simply because they're getting better, faster, and cheaper. Leaders in the Guelph community that we talked to also kind of spoke about last mile delivery to consumers in China and the related opportunities and challenges. More retail brands are investing in tracking and transparency throughout the post-order process. What they're really trying to do is improve the white glove delivery experience. But we also heard that more innovation and progress is needed to integrate the final mile delivery systems that are operating in China with some of the US-based e-commerce operations and so forth. We expect to see smart fulfillment accelerate as more brands embrace sustainable practices. So I think that's one finding that's kind of new and different in this round of research. However, right now it remains to be seen how the COVID-19 crisis will impact the adoption of these sustainable shipping practices.
I mean, that's a fascinating question. You know, when you think about product movement and, quarantined containers moving back and forth, you know, losing 14 days on either side, it does seem to point to more domestic in China facilities, right? Because you avoid these quarantine periods for however, and however that shakes out. So, let me just hang on that for a bit. So are these hybrid and smart fulfillment models designed primarily to speed up delivery to the Chinese consumer?
I guess yes and no, maybe mostly yes. It's really a combination of faster delivery to the shoppers, but it's also lower price shopping. Mm-hmm. And then I think the lowering the waste is kind of the new piece of the equation, if you will. We definitely heard that demand is growing for nearshore fulfillment models that stage products closer to consumers in China. In fact, I think several executives that, kind of especially towards the end of the interviews during the holidays, really kind of discussed some of the hybrid models where they're working with. I know one had talked about working with the team at the quote unquote new Tmall Global to forward deploy their hero products. So again, these are usually their best sellers and maybe their new releases. They're forward deploying those hero products in and around China, but they're fulfilling their long tail cross-border orders from their US-based assortment. So, interesting hybrid operation there. It was also interesting that we heard a lot more about Tmall Global in the new study than we did back in 2017. I think what we're seeing is that more of the leading brands are growing into Tmall China and other platforms as well. That being said, it's important to note that Tmall Global and Tmall China are still separate teams, and they do compete with each other. Although we heard in the interviews that Alibaba's doing a good job of making the transition from Tmall Global to Tmall China more seamless. So we expect to, kind of see and hear more on that front as well. While we heard that brands are embracing the hybrid fulfillment models, challenges still remain with these models, however. That was pretty clear. For instance, delivery times vary significantly for nearshore orders versus the cross-border orders. And sites don't always do a great job of alerting shoppers to this reality. You go online, you don't know necessarily which ones are based in Hong Kong or fulfillment operations are in a bonded warehouse, within a day's transit versus, ones that are sitting in LA or something like that. I think the last big challenge we heard was that managing returns from the cross-border direct-to-consumer sites is, quote unquote, not always so easy.
Yeah, it's really interesting because it's so complex. You've got this globalization, so to speak, of a fast mover, slow mover strategy that you'd even see domestically, right? I'm gonna put the fast movers that are in the flyer, for example, in a efficient pick and pack warehouse, and the long tail I'll pick from the store shelves. You're seeing this interestingly in kind of adopted globally, where you've got the fast movers in country and the longer tail shipped out. But you bring up such a great point about reverse logistics, because everything doesn't always go forward, right? We know in our world that returns happen, and how you deal with those and manage those, it just feels kind of strange to ship product from Asia to North America, to ship back to Asia, and then back to North America, and back to, you get into this crazy loop. It's so fascinating. Now, you guys, you covered a lot of ground. We've covered a lot of ground. Any other executive takeaways you can share with us as we start to wrap up? Jim, why don't you kick us off?
Yeah, sure. First of all, we really wanted to thank the executive leaders within the Guelph community for sharing their insights and, what they've been learning, with us. And it's really been fascinating. We've really enjoyed these conversations. And we also want to thank you, Michael, for spending the time with us today so we can, share the key findings from the takeaways. One note, I think, for anyone listening is that we have really been developing a lot of, content and findings with our research. So these really are at a high level, and we're happy to elaborate upon them, offline. But yeah, back to your question, Michael, I think just some big takeaways, I think, that we're seeing, and this was commonly heard from, many of the executives, we interviewed. At a high level, we always wanted to remind everyone that success in China takes hard work. There really is no silver bullet for e-commerce success in China, and everyone is taking a slightly different approach. It's very important to remember that there's really no right or wrong, way to go about, entering and operating, in China. Brings us to a common best practice, but one that's easily forgotten. You have to be patient. Mm. What you think will work often won't. You can't use the same, kind of cookie cutter infrastructure or tactics that many brands use in other markets, around the world. Standards and requirements are different. We've talked about that and from some of the data integration challenges, for example. Everyone, with whom we spoke, agreed that it is important to have boots on the ground in order to really move forward. We saw that with earlier stages, where they didn't have, kind of their committed, people on the ground, and they regretted that. Mm-hmm. So they're saying you really have to connect, with the consumers in China, and to do so, you first, have to be working, with partners that understand, like insights on the attitudes and behaviors towards, shopping. As one executive said, connecting with Chinese consumers starts with understanding how they think. It sounds obvious, but it's a really important thing to remember. And we can't just, again, be doing things that we would, normally do, say, in our domestic markets.
And Kent, what have you been hearing around the conference tables? What's your perspective?
And we kind of wrap up the executive summary with this is again, picking up on Jim's point, really, really important to enter China carefully. There are no silver bullets. You have to think long term. You have to have the right Chinese e-commerce partners, but there's no template for finding the right e-commerce partner, trade partner for China either. Regardless of whether you're selling via marketplaces or messaging platforms or social or direct-to-consumer cross-border operations. When it comes to finding the right partner for growing your China e-commerce sales, I'd say the global e-commerce leaders shared really five key lessons. And again, the first one, take your time. You have to cast a wide net. You also have to accept that you really can't keep a secret in China. Number two, balance your trade partner's presence in China and in the U.S. If you're working with a Tmall partner or another systems integration type company that's getting your presence built on an Alibaba platform or JD or WeChat, your company and your organization's unique characteristics are going to help really define the perfect balance for you. So a lot of it is an internal. You got to know your internal organization before you can kind of find the right trade partner. I think what we also heard was that you have to accept that the biggest partner isn't always the best one for your company. Fourth, prioritizing product category specialists was something that we clearly heard in the interviews. And then lastly, look for data-centric mindsets among your trade partners or the prospective trade partners. Also look for a willingness for them to put skin in the game. I think that's probably, if we had to do a top five list, those would be it.
Yeah, it's very insightful. Jim, you mentioned the importance of taking your time in China. Talk about the trade-off between taking your time and this feeling that I have that the opportunity, the window of opportunity in China is closing, or will at least close soon in terms of being able to get in there and talk about the ground floor. But talk about that. I mean, this trade-off between taking your time and quick to action.
Yeah, we don't believe that the window of opportunity is closing. In fact, you know, we think this is still very, you know, early stages, you know, especially for Western brands, you know, to be, you know, selling through digital channels in China. But it really still starts, you know, with the Chinese consumer, and the consumer market is still emerging and, you know, evolving, you know, rapidly. You know, for example, the trend towards, you know, more individuality, you know, certainly being reflected in some new, you know, purchasing patterns, and you know, really, who knows, you know, how the behavior and attitudes of shoppers are going to change as we get into rebuilding, you know, post COVID. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we still think it's very, you know, early in China, but one thing that we'll always stress at the same time is that you have to move, you know, quickly, because, you know, China time, you know, things change very quickly. So China time, you know, often refers to the future will be here within a year or less. It's evolving at a very different rate from certainly what we see with more mature, you know, retail markets in other countries. So definitely, as you're, you know, entering into the, you know, the Chinese markets, you know, we're encouraging retail leaders, you really need to be ready to be, you know, nimble, agile, and take advantage of, you know, some of these, you know, changing shopping behaviors.
Yeah, the it's the China equivalent of the New York Minute. Kent, talk about Guelph Events, and what's your perspective on this?
We're definitely really pleased with the success and the growing engagement that we get at the Guelph Events. You know, obviously, face to face events are a little bit on hold, probably until summertime. We'll be in New York October the 1st, so we're really looking forward to getting the Guelph community back together, and, you know, really kind of picking up where we left off in LA, which was probably by far our best West Coast Guelph so far. Kind of the way we started the interview, though, you know, we talk a lot about China being the headwaters of retail innovation, and we continue to see that. You know, we've covered a lot of those initial findings. We've got, as Jim mentioned, you know, much deeper, you know, a lot of rich insights that, you know, really aren't included in this executive summary that we're releasing now. Brands want to get into China. They want to thrive. They understand that it's going to be hard work and it's going to take time. But we do want to remind people what we heard in the interviews is that they have to be ready to invest, and in many cases, transform their business in order to be successful in China. One executive told us that he thinks China today is a lot like thinking back to 1999, when a lot of us got into the e-commerce world during the early days. At that time, people were looking at getting into e-commerce. Those that move slowly to embrace e-commerce, they're not even around anymore. So, you know, I thought it was a really telling, you know, kind of story, if you will, that, you know, look at e-commerce in China the way that you looked at e-commerce when it was just getting going here in the U.S. It's definitely not for everyone, but there is something for everyone. So, you know, maybe that's a good way to wrap up. Again, Michael, really want to thank you for partnering with us as we launch this podcast. We'll be looking forward to getting episodes out every couple of weeks, you know, every week, every now and then. Hopefully we'll have some exceptions and really kind of engage the Guelph community. So thanks again for your time. And we really do look forward to working with the Guelph community and in virtual environments over the next couple of months. We'll have a webinar that will be coming out in early May, maybe mid-May, really kind of going around the world, looking at, you know, kind of what's the current state of e-commerce, you know, as people come out of the COVID crisis, you know, what markets might be coming back online quicker. What can we learn from markets that are a bit of ahead of the curve, like China? So really looking forward to the webinars that are coming up. We'll probably be doing some lunch and learns as well as, you know, engaging e-commerce leaders on the podcast. So thanks again, Michael.
Well, it's such a treat to be able to talk to both of you. I learn so much every time we chat. I mean, you brought up a couple of great points there. I just wanted to close on myself, which is, you know, wanted to make sure that listeners know that this podcast is about global e-commerce, which is doesn't mean, often means China, but also means, as you said, you know, you were out in LA, the LATAM markets, many markets around the world we're going to be covering with guests and research. And I want to pick up on the other thing that you talked about is the upcoming events. And, you know, given the time we're living in, person-to-person events right now are not possible. But this, you know, what we conceived of together is this podcast, helping keep that community of interest together, because it's such fascinating learnings when I've attended the conference. So it's just a way to keep those learnings going and to share them outwards. Speaking of sharing, now we've releasing research, the Guelph team's releasing research. Where can people go to find that, to download and learn more about Guelph? Jim, where can they find the research?
They can be going to our website, globalecommerceleadersforum.com. Our resources tab on the site, you know, has lots of, you know, downloadable information, and certainly we encourage people to visit us there.
All right. Well, listen, thanks, guys. Let's wrap it up for this episode. Such a treat again to talk to you. Look forward to speaking with you again soon. And let's be safe out there.
Thanks, Michael.
Thanks, Michael.
Hi, this is Sylvain Charlebois, Senior Director of the Agri-Food Analytics Lab at Dalhousie University in Halifax. Join us on our brand new podcast, The Food Professor, together with Michael LeBlanc, producer and host of the Voice of Retail podcast. We'll look at the hot issues in the food service, grocery, and restaurant industries, discuss proprietary industry and consumer food-related research, check out fresh new ideas, and talk about half-baked strategies. Available on iTunes, Spotify, all the major podcasting platforms, debuting in May.
Well, all right, that's a wrap on this edition of the Global E-Commerce Tech Talks podcast. If you like this podcast, you can subscribe on Apple, iTunes, or your favorite podcast platform. Please rate and review, and be sure and recommend to a friend or colleague in the retail and cross-border commerce industry. I'm Michael LeBlanc, founder and president of ME LeBlanc Company, Inc. You can learn more about me on www.meleblanc.co, and you can learn more about the Global E-Commerce Leaders Forum online at www.globalecommerceleadersforum.com. Until next time, have a safe week.